Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Yesterday afternoon, a committee of the Utah House of Representatives heard a measure by Mill Creek Democratic Representative Doug Owens. Here's one of the witnesses who spoke in favor of the measure, Dr. Jay Jacobson, highlighting some of the language of House Concurrent Resolution 15.
One statement in Representative Owens' resolution really captures the message that many communities need to hear and all will welcome. It says that the governor and the legislature denounce anti-Semitism and all hateful speech and violent action that casts blame, promotes racism or discrimination, or harms the state of Utah's Jewish community.
The idea behind Representative Owens' resolution is to send a message that Utah rejects hate. And here's the thing. There have been some high-profile incidents in recent weeks and months that show that Utah is by no means immune to that bigotry. Perhaps the most obvious recent example, when the then-chairman of Utah software company Entrata sent an email to Utah political leaders and others saying that the COVID-19 vaccine was part of a nefarious plot to, quote, euthanize the American people. His scapegoat in that crackpot conspiracy? The Jews. The internet, where we spend more and more of our time, is awash in conspiracy theories. And the pandemic has amplified that tendency by both pushing us online to an even greater degree and by serving as a malleable blank page event, something that bizarre narratives can easily be grafted onto. Scientists for decades had predicted a pandemic like the one we're living through, where a virus makes a not-so-big leap from another animal into our own species, and where, because people don't have any natural immunity, it spreads rapidly and to deadly effect. But when it actually happened, a lot of people craved a better story than that. They blamed Chinese scientists for creating the virus intentionally, or they pulled out a card from an old deck and blamed the Jews. Sociologists tell us that conspiracy theories can help people feel some degree of control when they are otherwise powerless, that the narrative can be oddly reassuring to the adherents of the outlandish, with an emphasis on the oddly there. But beyond obscuring the truth, these online conspiracies have other consequences. They lead to more hate. That hate can translate into dangerous behaviors out in the real world.
You know, first of all, living in Utah, being Jewish, people usually treat me with a lot of respect. It's not, I usually don't see anti-Semitism, but it's definitely increased recently. I mean, I look at Dave Bateman's comments. I see the swastikas ending up in places, etched in synagogue doors. I see them in Sandy and Dimpledale. I see it. I heard an incident just recently in Park City, and I saw protests at the governor's mansion with a flag with a swastika, again, associated with the COVID issue. I'm Patrice Arendt. I'm a former member of the Utah Senate and House. And during most of that time, I was the only member of the legislature that was Jewish. I served longer than anyone as the co-president of the National Association of Jewish Legislators, and I'm still on their executive board. I'm a member of the United Jewish Federation of Utah's Anti-Semitism Task Force. I grew up in Utah. My children, fifth generation to live in the state. My daughter's a rabbi in Chicago, And I've seen anti-Semitism from my own personal experience, and I've seen it rise throughout my lifetime.
Patrice Arendt is now retired from the Utah legislature after two decades in office in both the House and Senate. The House district she vacated in 2020 is now represented by Doug Owens, who is running that resolution condemning anti-Semitism in Utah. Arendt says that it's a problem that needs addressing, and as you heard, that perspective, for her, is personal.
In my own experience, and this has never happened before, going to grocery store parking lots or gas station parking lots and having people yell at me knowing I'm Jewish and saying Hitler was right, or accusing me of, you know, being a Christ killer. And I didn't see that before. Just that kind of thing has never happened to me before. And I certainly have been outspoken about being Jewish. People know in this area I'm Jewish, at least some people do. And those incidents are very sad, and I could go on to name more and more of them. We have to pay for security at our synagogue now. We never used to have to pay for security. We have to do training in case we have an incident.
It used to be easy for us to say, oh, those folks are the racists, the people who are walking down the street in white robes, burning, crosses and stuff like that. And now we live in a day and age where your next door neighbor or the person you sit next to at work could be inhaling hatred from their home and you don't realize that. I'm Rabbi Sam Spector. I'm the rabbi at Congregation Kol Ami in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Rabbi Spector says that while it might be tempting to simply dismiss the outlandish theories as being too bizarre for belief, the truth is that they are gaining purchase in places and ways that simply can't be dismissed.
I mean, with the comments that Mr. Bateman, the former chairman of Bentrada made, I think that most reasonable people dismissed these as complete lunacy and such. But keep in mind, we have a sitting member of Congress, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who a few years ago wrote on Twitter that California wildfires were caused by Jewish space lasers, by space lasers owned by the Rothschild family. And just a couple months ago, we had 300 or so people showing up at a rally in Dallas, Texas, to welcome JFK Jr. back from the dead to run for president with Donald Trump. So I think that, unfortunately, we are living in a time where conspiracy theories and stuff like QAnon is creating a lot of danger in our world.
Rabbi David Levinsky of Park City's Temple Har Shalom Reform Congregation also has stories of anti-Semitism in his community, and he points out that it's part of a broader picture of intolerance and racism.
The main place where we're seeing anti-Semitic activities, and I would speak broadly, I would say racist or bigoted activities, you know, definitely, you know, Jews are targets of these things, but it's a much wider problem than that. But, you know, the main place where we've been seeing this has been in the schools, you know, where myself and a Jewish teacher at the school at this point have documented nearly 50 events that have happened over the past few years. So this is not a matter of a small number of isolated incidents. We're hitting a situation where, unfortunately, in the schools, there's fairly consistent bigoted harassment that students from minority populations, the Latinx community, people of color, Filipino community, Jews are experiencing.
The most recent high-profile incident in Rabbi Levinsky's community was a swastika and the N-word being carved on a desk in a classroom where a Jewish teacher teaches. Many other incidents in Park City schools were documented by that teacher and his students. Individually, the stories you've been hearing from Patrice Arendt, Rabbi Samuel Spector, and Rabbi David Levinsky are troubling, but they are just a drop in the bucket. Recently, I spoke with Seth Brisk. He's the Central Pacific Regional Director for the Anti-Defamation League, or the ADL, a Jewish organization that battles anti-Semitism and hate and that tracks incidents of extremism and anti-Semitism around the nation.
So to be sure, we are living through a period of time where we've seen vastly increased incidents of anti-Semitism taking place across the United States. Utah is no different than any other state particularly. And so what we're seeing is the last year that we have on record for incidents was one of the highest years ever in the more than four decades we've been tracking. And in the last 4 years that we have on record, there are four highest years that we've ever seen in terms of anti-Semitic incidents being perpetrated. And these incidents fall under the categories of harassment, which could be legal expressions, but also severe forms of harassment that may cross the line into illegality, as well as vandalism and assaults. And so this increase is happening both in terms of harassment, but also in terms of hate crime that's targeting the Jewish community. And then if you look at the FBI statistics, you see a correlation there that the last few years have had sharp rises in hate crime taking place, over 7,000 incidents across the country in each of the last 4 years. 2020, which is the most recent year that they have, was over 7,500, which is, again, a very high number. And that consistent over time, over the last several decades, that the Jewish community is the most targeted of any of the religious groups. In fact, more targeted than all other religious groups combined.
So what's driving this marked increase in anti-Semitism? Again, here's Seth Brisk with the Anti-Defamation League.
So we think that many of the reasons for this increased extremism and the expressions of extremism are twofold. One, because extremist groups and people on the fringe are feeling more emboldened. They're feeling that their very extreme conspiratorial views, the lies that they spread, are much more readily accepted and are not seen as beyond the pale when they are expressed. And then we're also seeing the use of technology, the weaponization of technology. So for instance, our incident reports that I just mentioned, they don't account for generalized expressions of hate that may be targeting the Jewish community. So if somebody posted something on Twitter or on Facebook or Instagram that was something that was clearly anti-Semitic, unless it was targeting a specific individual, we wouldn't count it for our audit. And so you can imagine that beyond those individual incidents that are taking place, there are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions perhaps even, of incidents that are taking place online every day. And again, that cycles back into the normalization of hate, the normalization of extremism. You see it often enough, it's repeated often enough, and then you feel comfortable expressing it yourself. And so we do see these issues being tied together, and it's pulling in people regardless of a variety of ideological backgrounds. And again, it's not just in the abstract. The online behavior does translate into behavior on the street.
During our conversation, Brisk also told me that politics is unfortunately often getting in the way of our taking action to combat intolerance.
Yeah, we've seen reluctance on the part of political leaders in both parties to call out members of their own party when they express these conspiratorial beliefs and anti-Semitism. Too often, we have seen it as a political football, as a way of trying to score points against the other side. And so when these incidents occur, it's instead of focusing on the incident, calling it out for what it is, extreme, dangerous, fringe, something that is beyond the pale, something that doesn't represent our society, something that I would hope and I think doesn't represent the particular political party. Instead of focusing on that message, there tends to be a, well, look at what the other side is doing, or look at what my colleagues across the aisle have said and done, instead of worrying about what's going on within your own party, within your own house. And if you are only concerned about what's going on the other side of the aisle, when you see anti-Semitism or any form of racism or bigotry being expressed from within your political party, then you're not interested in confronting that bigotry. You're interested in scoring political points. You're interested in politics. And so we have seen too much of that these days. And that's part of this allowance for the normalization of hate.
And again, just in terms of what's happening in the online sphere, that cesspool from which a lot of the hate and those conspiracy theories are emerging, the Anti-Defamation League's Seth Brisk says that not enough is being done by those with power to act to confront the problem.
Again, there's lots of other things going on here. The social media companies are not being particularly transparent. So they talk about the numbers of accounts that they've suspended or messages that they've removed, and that's well and good, but we don't know out of how many messages are out there, out of how many accounts that are out there, and they aren't providing the kinds of transparency for independent auditors to say, you're doing a good job, or you need to improve. And to the extent that we've seen some of that information, the news is not good. And we're also seeing it in terms of year upon year, as the social media companies are saying, we're doing a better and better job. Our numbers from the polling show that online hate and harassment, particularly severe online hate and harassment, it's not going down. It's either maintaining at a very high level or it's actually gotten worse. And then there's other things. There is only around 15% of severe online harassment posts are taken down, or the people who are making those posts are deplatformed by those social media companies. So it means that the people who are putting out these messages, those messages are still getting out there, even when they're proven to be severe harassment, stalking, doxing, meaning the broadcasting of private information, of public information, really, but in a targeted way meant to intimidate, and even swatting, which is a falsified call to law enforcement to try to elicit an armed response as a means of harassment and intimidation. So in many cases, these are not necessarily illegal activities. In one case, swatting resulted in the death of a person who was the target of a SWAT at the hands of law enforcement who thought that they were coming to a situation where there was an armed intruder. And in other cases, again, it causes harassment, intimidation, and it's meant to terrorize people. So we need to know more from the social media companies about the work that they're doing and how successful they are so that they can improve. And in some cases, they're simply just saying, we don't think it's hateful content, we're not gonna take it down. And so that is also contributing. And then finally, it's this notion of anonymity that many of these platforms allow for. You know, people used to have to hide behind a hood to be a bigot marching through the center of town. Today, you can sit at your home and have an anonymous account that covers your identity and allows you to spread that kind of hatred. So there's so many different ways in which technology plays a very important role in the spread of extremism.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, there's also, I imagine that there are those who exploit it for monetary gain even, who form anonymous groups to, you know, generate ad revenue for themselves or whatever the thing is. Yeah.
Oh, sure. We saw live streaming of the January 6th insurrection where people were interacting with people and through their live feed. They were giving them shout outs if they had committed a bigoted act in taking part in the January 6th insurrection. And we have also seen people collect funds through the January 6th insurrection and elsewhere using their online platform. And again, you know, we're talking about people who are representing very small fringe extremist groups. It used to be that they had to Xerox paper, put their flyers on the windshields of cars at a strip mall or something. They'd reach a very small audience. Now you can sit at home and you can reach tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, depending upon the reach of your audience and depending upon how many followers you might have. So it really has amplified their ability to broadcast and to be seen as being a larger presence really than what they are.
I started the show off by highlighting Mill Creek Democratic Representative Doug Owens' resolution condemning anti-Semitism, a resolution that he's running at this year's legislative session. During yesterday's committee hearing on that measure, Mike Maurer, senior advisor to Governor Spencer Cox, spoke in favor of the resolution. In his testimony, Maurer highlighted a family connection to the liberation of concentration camps during World War II and drew a direct line between today's conspiracy theories and another that has appeared from time to time over the past decades, the denial of the truth of history that some 6 million Jews were systematically murdered by the Nazis and their collaborators during the Holocaust.
30-second story. Years ago, I had the chance to speak at a Holocaust commemoration. My uncle was here. He was a liberator at Buchenwald. And here's Mr. Katz, who was a survivor of Buchenwald. And I remember asking my uncle, who would very seldom talk about it, but in his later years, he started talking about it. And I said, why didn't you talk about it? And why are you talking about it now? And he said, he's a farm kid from Fairview. He's like, it was so absolutely horrific. I couldn't bring myself to talk about what I found that day when, as a part of Patton's Third Army, they opened up the gates at Buchenwald. He said, I couldn't talk about it. But then on television, I would hear people denying that the Holocaust took place. And it was so interesting to have a survivor there, Mr. Katz, who went through Auschwitz and survived Buchenwald, and to realize, oh my word, why in heaven's name in 2022 is anti-Semitism still an issue? Why aren't we doing more to combat it? And why is it that in front of our places of worship on Sunday, we don't have police cars to make sure that we're safe going in and out of my church, but by golly, every week when you go on a Saturday to Congregation Kol Ami or to Chabad downtown, there's a police car parked out front that their congregants have to pay for to make it safe. There is a problem in our country with anti-Semitism, and there is a problem in denying that terrible things have happened to Jewish people. The governor's goal and our goal in supporting this resolution is to take our stand and say, enough is enough. There's no room for hate.
Again, that's Mike Maurer from the governor's office. Former Democratic Representative Patrice Arendt told me that Governor Spencer Cox hosted a listening meeting recently with a number of representatives of the Jewish community in Utah, and that finding ways to address the kind of hate that she personally has experienced is something that the governor is taking seriously. Arendt also told me that despite the increase in anti-Semitic incidents that you've been hearing about on this show, she does still find room for hope.
I saw how many people immediately condemned the horrible statements of Dave Bateman, people I respect. And that, you know, made me hopeful. If people had stayed silent or had gone along with what he'd said, I would have been just, you know, beyond distressed. So I'm hopeful that there are good people out there that are condemning these horrible actions, that Utah has made progress, you know, passed hate crimes legislation. You know, yeah, I'm discouraged. We're all discouraged at some point, but I try and remain hopeful.
So how do you confront bigotry in your own life? How do you think we ought to be doing that as a society? What's at the root of this problem in your mind? I'd love to get your thoughts for a follow-up story that I'll be working on, because actually there's quite a lot that we didn't get to on the show today. Email your thoughts to comments@kcpw.org, and I'll try and get back to you. As we wrap up the show today, I'll mention for the record that House Concurrent Resolution 15 condemning anti-Semitism passed unanimously out of committee yesterday. A number of resolutions at the legislature this year have been placed on the consent calendar, which essentially fast-tracks those measures for approval and restricts floor debate in the full House and Senate. Representative Owens, HCR 15's sponsor, asked that his resolution not get that fast track.
Leadership has asked us to guard our precious floor time, yes, and to make these joint resolutions, put them on the consent calendar, yes, where possible. I think we ought not to do that in this case. I think we ought to not let it come and go in a hurry on the floor. I think we need to dwell on it. I think we need to hear some comments from around the state. To hear that my friend and mentor and neighbor, Patrice Arendt, has suffered the kind of things that she has, that was news to me as we sat here today. Yeah. I think these things need to be spoken on the floor.
You've been listening to In the Hive here on KCPW, a listener-supported, entirely independent, local public radio resource. Find podcasts over at kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next.